This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yeah, it's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Class is in session with my two favorite people, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, producer Jess, hanging out, doing a little bit of class in session, doing a little bit of learning. Jess, how's your day, or how have your days been going?
They've all been kind of blending into one another, but I am trying to do my best to set nice boundaries and protect my time, because as you've been teaching me, that itself is a form of resistance, and my day certainly just improved. You said that I was one of your two favorite people. I definitely won't tell, you know, your wife or your children about that. I'll just keep that for myself, you know. How are you doing, Johnny?
Hey, I'm doing great. You know, it's a great week of teaching. We're getting ready to go into spring break over here, which is really more of a winter break, if you ask me. But it's almost spring-like, and it's college campus spring break time. So we're heading into that, and it's, you know, can't complain much.
Well, I'm glad we're not complaining, because, you know, some people would say there might be a lot to complain about nowadays. But hey. Yeah, maybe we'll have a little bit of that, but you know, classes in session, got something to teach here. You know, a little continuation from homeroom, revisiting the Dear John. No, wait, it wasn't a Dear John letter. It was a Dear Colleague letter, I should say. Yes, I know. That was just me. I come on, I'm trying to make it a little bit of fun
as
here.
As long as you find yourself funny, that's really all that matters.
Good. You know, a little bit of amusement. But the attacks on diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's all over. We had talked about, you know, diversity. Are you against diversity? Most people go, no. Are you against inclusion? No. Are you against equity? No. So why are you against DEI? Because, well, Johnny, you tell me.
Well, Tim, I think there are a lot of people who believe they are against those things right now. And I think that there's need to clarify, like, what they mean, where they exist, where they came from. They're not new woke ideas. You know, they're part of core democratic values. We've talked about that a lot on the show over the past couple of years. Like, what does it mean to be a democratic citizen, and what are core democratic values? And those are certainly part of being part of a democracy. They don't belong to Republicans. They don't belong to Democrats. They belong to everybody, all the people. We used to have a guy who'd call in L.A. Tom, who would remind us all the time. Tim, what would L.A. Tom tell us every time he'd call in?
Hey, you know, think about that government. As he said, he was always giving us that FDR quote. Help me out, John M. Blanken, though.
We, our the government, people are ultimately, yes, the
okay,
government.
Yeah. Wait. And then
just
he's always an
today.
FDR.
which is popular sovereignty, which is a core democratic value. So, you know, I get very literal about these things, but language is important, because words illuminate certain things and they hide other things, and they carry forward meaning, especially in political discourse and rhetoric. And so when we talk about, like, diversity is a condition of difference on which everything exists. So if we're against diversity, we're against our own existence. We are like diverse cells and warring bacteria colonies in our stomachs, especially mine today. I can hear the tummy war, but nonetheless, you know, these are biodiversity and cultural diversity are absolutely essential to our existence as human beings, as communities, as cultures, as ecosystems. But they're also highly valued in a democracy. I'm not saying that that belongs to just Democrats.
No.
Or that it's some woke liberals who want to value diversity. However, recent decades, and like in the past few years especially, right, we've seen a shift in language to where an identity of woke liberal, right, or Democrat gets assigned to valuing diversity. And here you have this highly politicized culture war, we can call it, where mm-hmm. one side is saying, well, I'm conservative. I'm not for these, you know, liberal ideas, or I'm liberal. I'm not for these conservative things. When in essence, these are core democratic values that we all ought to be valuing. And diversity and equity and equality, right? And including everyone must participate in a democracy. Everyone's voice is valued, right? And everyone has a responsibility to participate. That's inclusion, mm-hmm. right? So it's really kind of working through the language. But Tim, I think what we're also referring to is that every teacher, every person in education I talk to, and even folks outside of it, but for sure everyone in it, and that's what we do here at Busted Pencils, right? Educated educators talking education, right? Everyone's talking about executive orders mm-hmm. and in association with that executive order, the Dear Colleague letter. And like you made a joke, like, is it a Dear John letter? Is it a Dear Colleague letter? Both of us and even some other folks I've talked to are like, the heck is a Dear Colleague letter? How do I know this? And as a social studies teacher, I remember these things and talk about them. But what is that exactly? So we were going to tease that out a little bit. What's happening with these executive orders? Right. How they're my long-winded way of saying antithetical to a healthy democracy. Right? And but, then what do they mean?
Well, and again, pointed out there the how this, you know, chicken egg things like this. Executive order came first. President Trump with the attack. Let's call it, you know, the attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion from his point of view, which has somehow twisted the valuing of these things into some form of its own kind of racism interpretation from the standpoint of the executive order. A lot of this, though, kind of comes out of this, you know, Supreme Court ruling that came out that, you know, looked at Students for Fair Admissions against Harvard. The confusion here, though, but the attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion through executive order came out. It was broad. And then, Johnny, as you said, what was followed up was a Dear Colleague letter. The Dear Colleague letter essentially came out from a specific office in the Department of Education, and it went to what we can say, K-12 leaders across the country, higher education leaders across the country. And this Dear Colleague letter was the Office of Civil Rights interpretation of the way the executive order should be enforced. Johnny, help me clear that up.
Yeah, so you got it, Tim. But I just want to back up and be specific because it's the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights.
Right.
So the OCR, but, you know, within the U.S. Department of Education. And why is that important is because we haven't seen any real movement in a very formal or official way to dismantle or close the Department of Education. However, we've heard talk of that quite a bit.
Oh,
and we're
yeah.
kind of expecting it's a possibility if Project 2025 unfolds as it has been. And, you know, the political moves of these executive orders stack up, then it's leading towards that. But this, what's important is, like, this is a letter, right? A Dear Colleague letter is what we call or generally refer to official communication sent from a government agency. Tim, that agency in this sense being the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights or the OCR, right? But it's sent out to institutions under its jurisdiction, like you said, K-12 schools, you know, state offices of superintendency, organizations of higher education. Basically, another way to think is anybody who takes federal funding,
right,
in education is getting this letter, right? So, and what these Dear Colleagues letters do and why they're called that, Tim, you might wonder, like, I've had these curiosities. What the heck do we call this thing a Dear Colleague letter? It's a little annoying for me being as literal as I am. It sounds like it's the sarcasm at work, because I'm like, this isn't a very friendly statement, even though they have been in the past at times. So they're not always bad news, right? But Dear Colleague letter comes from, that's the way that the letter starts. It's addressed, like I might address a letter or a note to whom this may concern,
mm-hmm.
right? And so when we write a letter, we address it to someone. Well, these are Dear Colleague letters because they're addressed generally to colleagues. right? And so what they do, though, is they provide guidance on policy interpretations, compliance expectations, or regulatory changes. And in the case that there was a Dear Colleague letter we're talking about here that came out on, come on of all days, on Valentine's Day, February 14th, right, comes out following some pretty hard-hitting executive orders. And what I mean is that these executive orders were really, really addressing civil rights and civil liberties for students and families and schools and programs and all that stuff. And so the letter followed up with some clarity on so what does this mean? Right. So that's why there's a lot of reference to the Dear Colleague letter in association with the executive orders, is because we kind of were like, I'm not sure how this is going to shake down.
Right.
Because these executive orders are actually calling for some stuff that's the opposite of what we've all been really not only advocating for, but understanding as basic human rights in education and democracy. Mm-hmm. And so to hear them in an order being asked to be removed or stopped or unfunded, which is one way of stopping things, mm-hmm. right? Then we got some more clarity in the letter. And it was like, come on, really? Not the Valentine we all wanted.
No box of chocolates or roses came with that Dear Colleague letter. You know, I like the way you point that, though, too. So, you know, imagine you're a principal, right? And in your mail, you got this Dear Colleague, and coming from the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, Dear Colleague, you know, we're colleagues. Check it out. The president issued executive order blank. Well, here's the deal. Here's what you have to do, and here's what you can't do. And a lot of that truly comes out of this saying, using a Supreme Court decision, Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard, which was essentially the affirmative action gutting or getting rid of, saying that you cannot use race-based preferences making decisions for admission into college. And that was the Supreme Court said. And so therefore, any type of race-based decision is unconstitutional. Okay. You know, and there are problems with that. There are advocates for that. There are people saying, yes, it's pure colorblindness, exactly what we wanted. Whatever the take is, that was the Supreme Court case. What the Dear Colleague letter here, and for a lot of our colleagues out there who were going, WTF, was, wait a minute. How does that Supreme Court case turn into the potential that a fifth grade teacher teaching about slavery in the southern United States in the 1850s and talking about the potential conditions in which slaves lived, that could possibly be something that is now against the law is the wrong word, but it's verboten. You can't do that because the Supreme Court said so. And this is where I think this Dear Colleague letter is way out of bounds. And that's just one example, because it tries to say that because race-based decisions in college admissions was found unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, therefore, any discussion of something dealing with, let's just talk this, slavery, race in this instance, cannot be framed in the standpoint of preferential types of treatments. So, right, John, I see you jump in again, man.
I think that's the desire of maybe some folks, that support this movement to, you know, we can say attack diversity, equity, inclusion efforts. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that, for me, and I've been scouring the letter, it's going to be debatable whether or not there's control over curriculum and things we teach, but how we phrase it and how we approach it is going to be really important. And we could talk a little bit about that. Heck, it might even end up being, you know, another show.
Absolutely.
But we can get into how do you pivot in times where there is like you said, a recommendation that the student fairness admissions case is applied more broadly in educational settings can be interpreted some different ways. That doesn't necessarily mean we can't teach what's best knowledge, right? And so we're in this gray area with what we can and can't teach. But some of the things that we definitely, and interestingly enough, Tim, in this, you'll like this one, you know, it calls for eliminating standardized testing as a mechanism for achieving racial balance. Okay. So it's like, okay, never a silver lining in rolling back civil rights. Like, this is not, I'm not celebrating this Valentine, but I was looking for anything in it that like in any way might be a real positive. But the other aspects, you know, is really, you know, thinking about the ways that there's a clear effort to shift policy, a policy shift on race conscious programming, which now comes down to like, what does it mean when we talk about race conscious programming? And Tim, that poses that gray area question. Does that include teaching history?
Right.
And some might say yes, and others might say, look, it's not race, right? Like race preferential programming. It's what's best for all people to understand in order to best be informed by history. So that, remember that cliche phrase, we learn history so we don't repeat the mistakes of the past. Well, how can we move forward together as a democracy if we're not learning about the past? And yes, there again, where we get to where these things lead to an attack on democracy is they may be limiting, certainly creating a freeze.
I was going to say, let's look, you know, before we really get into saying, well, it doesn't really, no, it doesn't really, but what is its real effect is the idea of a fifth grade teacher now hearing this Dear Colleague letter interpreted through a principal, the potential to hear that, my goodness, some of the course class stuff that I teach, boy, you know what? I'm not going to repackage it. I'm just not going to do it because I don't want to be the one who gets in trouble. And I would say that that's the intention here, is to silence through the threat of the possibility of getting in trouble. You know, that's where, I mean,
well, Tim, the specific language from the letter, which helps clarify the executive orders, is, you know, it's discouraging using proxies as an indirect means to consider race.
Right.
And then they name essays and extracurricular and activities. And this could very well, so giving credit to that, could very well be a chilling effect.
Yes.
People overseeing curriculum to teachers, you know, asking, wait, so now can I teach this? What can I and can't I teach about? And we're in a moment where, remember, like L.A. Tom would remind us, right? We the people are the government. Yeah. That's the essence of popular sovereignty in a democracy. So we do have to remember, hey, education is a state right. And so how do we locally, this is a big pitch for folks listening out there, locally engage in our school boards, support our superintendents, support our teachers, support these public institutions. Remember, Timothy Snyder in his 20 lessons, you know, tells us like to support institutions that support democracy. Well, our public schools, right, and our office of superintendents and at every state level, and that's why they're there. They're there to oversee the curriculum. They're the ones who are going to say, what does that mean, using proxies or indirect means to consider race? How do we as a state, how do we as districts and public schools want to handle these things?
Yeah, I know it just comes across, and to me the chilling effect is the intention here. Yes, because if some of this stuff gets challenged and put forward, it doesn't really matter. It's kind of like one of those things where, well, I was found not guilty. Oh, too late now to be found not guilty when the accusation that was put forward already created such pain and hardship in your life in this standpoint. And you think about that too. The effect, these are teachers, Johnny. These are our friends. These are our colleagues out there who have got into this profession to to make sure that they're doing right by children, families, and communities. The reality here that they're now going to potentially take, you know, massive amounts of flak, pain, live grenades from these culture wars. Look, they just, I mean, we're asking way too much. And I think that's the other problem is that, and I really appreciate it. And I will say, we'll give that, you know, a little kudos out there. Check out Julian Vasquez Heilig's stuff right now. He's really out there promoting a lot of, you know, how do we push back on this? And in fact, Education Deans for Justice and Equity are having a big town, a virtual town hall on Thursday to talk about what does it mean to be an education institution in the wake of this Dear Colleague letter. All of these things, you know, we need to push back. But I also think that, you know, when I'm thinking about that fifth grade classroom teacher somewhere in, you know, southern Pennsylvania, who says, man, I'm just trying to do best by kids. And I don't think I can do it anymore. And this then goes back to, boy, guess what? You thought we had a teacher shortage coming into this? What do you think's going to happen in the next few years, Johnny? So Dear Colleague letters, hey, this one, I didn't really care for it. And now, go ahead, Johnny. You jump.
Well, no, but it's something we got to talk about. We got to understand, and we'll continue to do so here at Busted Pencils, especially I think the next shift is, so how do we do the work we know is important and valuable to democracy? So Educators and educational leaders out there, expect more of that from us, because that's what we're going, where we're going next. How do we still value human rights and do this work?
And now for your moment of zen. So if you criticize your government, you're considered unpatriotic. That premise should be discarded.
Hey, thanks for listening to Class in Session. And don't forget to find face-offs and free throws with us on Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or you can always find us on the Civic Media website. Also, don't forget to tune in and listen to us live on Saturdays at 3 p.m. Central Time on all the Civic Media networks. And you can always download those wherever it is you get your podcasts. Thanks for caring about democracy and public education with us here at Busted Pencils. And keep busting pencils.